Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. I'm Matt Cause. That's Bob Mackowitz. Bob, how you doing?
Matty, I'm good. We must be close to 200 episodes.
We are on episode 196.
Are we going to do anything special for our 200th?
You know, we say we will. Probably not, but, you know, we'll reminisce. we could drink before.
I have an idea. Clip show.
Oh, we'll do all our best episodes. Mm-hmm. Yes, I love it. I love it.
Classic moments from the Macko and Cause podcast. Here's one where Bob's mad at Matt. Oh, another one where Bob's mad at Matt.
And here's the time when Bob was upset with Matt. It's hilarious.
Ooh, Matt gets the best of Bob in a surprise turn of events.
Hey, look, Matt won again.
I have a lot to get to today, Matt. Do you?
I do. I have dogs and bikes I want to get to with you.
Hey, I want to get to dogs too. Do you want to start there?
Okay, let's start with dogs. I want to ask you a question.
Okay.
How hard is it when you're walking your dog, the politics of when you encounter someone else and, you know, your dog and their dog are playing? Like, how long do you got to do this for? Because if you spend, like, so much time with each individual, because there's so many people, dogs, if you keep doing that with each person, you're going to go, like, 50 feet in an hour. Like, how does that work with the disengaging and just moving on with your day?
Totally case by case. And also, is it a nice dog? Are they having fun? Is the person connected to the dog? Are they nice? Are you having fun? There's a lot of variables here, Matt. But, it is perfectly fine just to put your head down and the dog's head down and go without stopping. That is okay, too. That is not rude.
Okay, because I wondered about that, because I walked a dog once ages ago. And the whole time I'm like, is this rude if I keep moving? And I thought about that today. I was out for a run and I just see all these dog on dog interactions. And I always wondered about just what the politeness is of all that.
It's not like running into coworkers at the supermarket where you have to stop and chat or it seems rude.
Yeah.
it's you've got somewhere to be. The dog has nowhere to be. And so it's all up to you and you do your thing. That is my opinion. It's nice to stop and chat sometimes. But one of the problems is, particularly with puppies, the leashes get entangled.
Yeah.
It's like Twister with Bill Pullman when he's tasting the grass. There's a big Twister that happens with the leashes.
And there's the episode where they talked about Twister. And there's the episode where Twister got brought up again.
I'll be honest, Matt. I didn't even need to go there. I just did it for you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. So I take my dog to the dog park. And Opal is now just 7 months. So she's still a puppy, although probably should know better by now, at least a little bit. And she is a very, very... Okay. She's a bright dog. She's got poodle in her, and poodles are super smart. So she's bright. She can learn. She chooses not to because she's energetic and a little bit combative. It's not the right word because she's actually quite friendly. She doesn't like authority. She wants to have fun when she wants to have fun.
Right.
So I come, and she's really like a mess. Her hair is a total COVID mess. She looks like a bear. And we come rolling in there. I look like a bear. I'm a total mess. And I have a feeling nobody likes us at the dog park.
Really? Are you the outcast?
I think so. You know how you know at the poker table, if you can't tell who the sucker is, it's you?
Yep.
I kind of feel like today I looked around and I thought, you know what? There's always one problematic owner. Oh, wait, it's me.
Everyone's, are you Rudolph? Are you guys being excluded from all the reindeer games?
Well, Opal gets right in there and she's a dog, but, you know, they got their ways and she wants to play with everybody all the time at 100%. She runs every route hard, Matt.
She's Wes Welker.
She really is. You know, she'll go across the middle, no problem. Slot back, I got you. And I thought to myself, why is it everything connected with our family always turns out to be smart but disobedient?
Is it self-selecting?
It's a great question, Matt. You know, I was wondering this, and I looked across the table the other day at my daughter, Charlotte, and she was eating dinner, and she was holding a pork chop in her hand, like Friar Tuck holds a turkey leg. And I thought, you know what? We're bad parents.
But it's fun. The pork chop is fun. It's a sword. It's a dagger. It's a wand. It's so many things.
I've got my own issues with authority, as you know.
Yes.
And I realized one of the problems about being a parent is we know it's all bullshit, but we can't tell the kids.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, they have to learn the rules that eventually will have no bearing on their lives.
But you still need to go tell the kid why to do something. When they say why, you say, because I'm your dad. That's why. You know, and no debate, no conversation, no debate, no compromise.
Matt, when you got to grade 9 and you saw French, what did you do?
Oh, I got out of there as fast as I could. I dropped down to general French. I learned how to say my boat is blue. I got 95% and I got the hell out of there.
So you were a really bright kid who looked around and said, or I could drop down to general level. Dominate the dojo.
Yep.
And not have to break a sweat. And most adults would say, but Matt, you have to challenge yourself. It's the journey that matters. Except for this. You're hosting wine events. You have a lovely partner. You have a wonderful home in downtown Toronto. You enjoy every moment of your life. You have a career that thousands of people would kill for. So what was the lesson about French again?
Au revoir, French. French makes me savamal.
Hey, so it only took us about 8 minutes to get to Matt Wins again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, where do you want to start today? Because I got a lot of things I could throw out to you.
Okay, we'll hold on to bikes in a little bit. One last thing. What's the longest amount of leash you can have? I see these retractable leashes, and they seem to go on for 4 kilometers. I'm like, listen. I know you want freedom for your dog, but let's rein it in a little bit.
So I started with the long leash, but as most things in life, we went to the short leash thereafter. I think it depends where you are. If you're in the city, short leash. Mm-hmm. It's funny because there is a thing that parents do when their kids mess up, and you kind of look at everyone and go, but they're a kid. And I think people should give you a lot of leeway in that case.
Yeah.
That's not as true for dogs. Mm-hmm. Like if your dog is like humping somebody's leg, it's not the leg's job to put up with it. Well, so that's why the long leash can be problematic.
Yes. Yeah. Anyway. All right. Sports.
Yeah. Leafs, basketball. I've got a baseball question. I've got a football question. Where do you want to start, Matt?
Well, the newsiest would be Dak Prescott.
Yes,
signs the 4-year, $160 million deal, the most in guaranteed money, blah, blah, blah. And I saw this deal and I thought this is great for Dak and everyone loves Dak Prescott. So hooray, hooray. But this is a stupid deal. You're given elite money for good, sometimes very good, but that money does not fit with the player.
Now, if you're the Dallas Cowboys and this thing goes south and you spend another 10 years in the wilderness and you let this guy go, is this stupid business, but also kind of smart business? Because you might be able to win with him. He's good. And you could put a team around him that's certainly very good, but it's like risk reward. For a guy like Jerry Jones, there's more headache in letting him go and starting at the beginning than there is in just giving him the extra cash.
But the funny thing about it is everyone painted Jerry as evil like a year ago when the offers they were giving for Dak were really fair. I think it's just everyone likes Dak. Everyone hates old rich Whitey. So then it was Jerry's being unfair. But the money was good. And the problem here is that like Dak has always been, has always had a lot of weapons around him. Ezekiel Elliott, elite offensive line, always good pass catchers, but he's never put up the truly great numbers. Like when you look at like the actual measurement systems, not just about yardage. And even when he had his best year, if you go back and look at it, most of his yards and touchdowns came against really shitty NFC East teams. Mm-hmm. So I always viewed, and when you give him all that money, it means you're going to have less money to spend on defense because salary cap. And I've always thought Dak was great on your fantasy team, but the reality of him never really lived up to what you wanted it to be.
So the two things that jumped out at me when I saw the contract were the amount of guaranteed money and the amount of signing bonus. Mm-hmm. And so is this contract crazy because there's guaranteed cash? Because for most of football's history, people would sign big deals, but after the signing bonus, you weren't really on the hook for much. Is the real revolution of this not the dollar figure, but the fact that so much cash is guaranteed?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's $126 million guaranteed. The signing bonus is $66 million. I had to pull this up. The highest in NFL history. And it's just like, to me, there's Aaron Rodgers, Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, Russell Wilson. You know, those four are the guys that get that. And then there's a tier below. And clearly, Dak is in that tier below. He's just being paid as top tier.
I know how this works in the music business, and I think I have a sense of how it works in the sports business. I would love to sit down and see what the 360 deal looks like for a Dak Prescott. And here's what I mean by that. We tend to think of the contract as what they can do on the field, right? You get paid in one-to-one direct relation to the results you have on the field. But right. As a business, that's actually not true. Because a Dak Prescott jersey, if the Cowboys do well for the next few years, it's going to sell. They're the biggest football brand in the world, one of the biggest teams in the world. And if you can have even just a really good quarterback, like we still talk about Tony Romo. Was Tony Romo ever great?
Moments, but you know, he was good. He was good.
Yeah, he was a really good quarterback, right? But they're still talking about him. They're still talking about Danny White. Like to be a good quarterback on the Cowboys is just something different. And that's got to be worth a gold mine to the Cowboys when you're out there selling jerseys, because it's easier to sell a quarterback's jersey than anybody else. So I wonder to what extent, like, we never really lift the hood on these football deals to, like, basketball, I think we're quite used to, you know, we're now at the point, like, you know, Durant signs with Brooklyn because the ownership has links to Alibaba and China, you know, like we're pretty sophisticated about basketball deals, but I feel we're pretty naive about football ones. Maybe Jerry just goes, yeah, it's a lot of dough, but I'm going to sell 50 million in jerseys.
Yeah. And it could be that. And it also could be Adam Schefter was saying, like, from some source, who knows that source was the money given to Dak Prescott is Jerry Jones tipping his cap that he knows a massive TV deal is coming for the NFL down the road.
That's interesting. That actually brings me to a backdoor question I want to ask you about football. We'll put a pin in it and come right back to it. Mm-hmm. So who are they now, the Cowboys? Like, what's different about them?
Not much. They were 13-3 in Dak's rookie year, where they had actually a good defense. Since then, they've been 500 to below 500. Dak's won one playoff game. Now that he's back, it should be a fun offense. But Ezekiel Elliott probably peaked. A lot of questions on defense. But you know what they are, Bob? It's a joke I've made many times. They're the smart kid in summer school because it's the NFC East. You know, like with Dak Prescott there and healthy, I'd be surprised if they didn't win the NFC East.
You know who Dak Prescott is and who the Cowboys are? They're Matt Cause in grade 9 General French.
Yep, that's right.
So you're saying that we should probably prorate the results?
If I was up to advance, there's no way I was getting... I got like 92% in General French in grade 9. Like, again, I've said it before, everyone copied off me, and I let everyone copy off me. It was wonderful and freeing.
It feels like you were like a Chevy Chase movie in grade 9.
Like I was letting everyone copy off me, like the great cheating scene in
Spies Like Us.
Yeah.
That's exactly it, bud. Okay, so you mentioned something about a TV deal. I want a backdoor. Are you finished with the Cowboys? Because that
yeah.
I want
if yeah, yeah, stuff. Yeah, no. That's we can go to the TV stuff. Yeah.
So I've been reading about how Amazon is looking to make a bid, not just for some second or third window rights, but like exclusive rights to certain games. How would you feel about a streaming service having football?
Not so good until my brother came over here and showed me how to watch all the games.
Mm-hmm. But does it matter to you where they are? Like, could you be just as happy watching it on Amazon Prime as you would be on Fox?
I guess the only thing is the ease of which I watch. Because, you know, if you got to sometimes switch from TV to Amazon, you got to hit the source button, and then you got to go to your smart TV or your Roku or whatever. At the very least, like right now, I could just jump from, you know, oh, this game's on Fox, this game's on CBS, this game's NBC. Oh, TSN's picked up this one, and I've got my remote control, and I jump. You know, just keep it easy for me to view in rapid succession.
I wondered, we've talked a lot about, like, as a culture, we've talked a lot about the rise of Netflix and the on-demand consumer experience that we experience across all boundaries now. And for so long, live sports is what kept the mainstream TV engine driving. And is it possible when the Rogers deal with hockey runs out that it's going to be on Netflix Canada instead?
It's a good question. I can guarantee this. It's not going to be a 12 fucking year deal. I can guarantee you that. I mean, that was just dumb on everyone's part.
Yeah, that one. Everybody got greedy.
Well, everyone.
The CTV tried to get greedy, but they got shut out.
It's so dumb for the NHL. Why don't you renegotiate that every 4 years when the value of live sports only goes up?
I want to get back to sports, but this leads me to another question. I was going to get into it later, but it's all sort of moving towards streaming right now. I saw an article, and it made me think of you, sadly, wistfully, that Alamo Movie Theaters in the States declared bankruptcy, and that's like a big movie chain, and it's just another nail in the coffin of the live movie experience. How do you feel? Like, I think I can guess how you feel, but how do you feel about a future where you just don't go see movies at the movies?
Honestly, that would make me very sad. It would make me really sad because this isn't just something from my childhood days, you know, or my teen, like as a teenager. Once a week, you went to the movies, you know, and that continued in my 20s and 30s. And maybe part of it is because I don't have kids. And I know it's just harder to go to movies when you have kids. You have responsibilities. It's harder to do and all that kind of stuff. But as someone who never has, that's never changed for me. And my girl, Amy, also loves going to the movies. And her twin sister loves going to the movies. Like, it's always been just such a part of my life. Like, just, it's got a beginning, a middle, and an end. It's got the anticipation when the lights go down. It's, you know, what snack are you going to get? Are you going to sneak in wine? The previews, like, just everything. I would be really sad if that goes away.
I agree with you. And then when I stop to think, why do I agree with you? I have no good reasons. Because the experience of going to the movies sucks in a lot of ways. The seats aren't that great. It's way too expensive. The snacks are outrageously priced. The idea of those beautiful old theaters that we used to go to, you know, the University or the Uptown 3, like, you know, the main one at the Uptown, like these beautiful Toronto theaters from back in the day. Well, they've been replaced by little mini boxes, basically. So it's not like there's any kind of mystique or prestige to most of these theaters anymore. But I agree with you, though. It feels like movies can't be a movie. It can just be 2-hour scripted content if it's on.
Yeah.
And I don't have a good reason why, but I feel that way.
You know what it is? One, I will push back. Most movie theaters now actually have comfy seats. And me, actually, because I'm an old man, I prefer the less comfy seats. The recliners now you get out of here with that. I agree with you in terms of ticket prices and snack prices. They are outrageous. But the thing is,
but don't forget, a lot of people have to go to the theater and park, which is another $25.
Yeah, 100%. Absolutely. It is not as cheap. Like, it's cheaper for me as someone who can just walk over, but you're 100% right. But what it is A, the communal experience. It's great scenic comedy where you're laughing and other people are laughing. It makes it funnier. It lifts up the experience. And I know the cynic is like, oh, I don't want to be around people. Everyone just coughs in my face. Well, that doesn't usually happen. Every now and then you get the asshole who talks. But there's that. Also, when you're at home, there are too many other distractions. Oh, let me pause and check Twitter. Oh, let me pause and I'm gonna clean some dishes. We just had dinner. Like, you know, it's too easy to be distracted. In the movie theater, it is more intimate. It's more communal. It's you and the director and writer and ever in the producer's vision. And that is what's taken away.
So it's funny you say that about the pause. And I think this might be a generational thing because a lot of people coming up with movies now don't expect to watch them all the way through. This is my experience. Mm-hmm. I was working with this one kid when Georgie and I were doing the Apple show here in Toronto, Sammy Iannicelli, whom I love. And I just thought this kid's so sharp. He's going far. And we set up a little movie club between the two of us and I'd flip him classic titles to watch. And so the first one was The Hustler, Paul Newman from the early 60s. And after a couple of days, I asked him if he watched it. And he said, well, I watched 20 minutes, but it's so long. I got to watch it in parts.
Ugh.
And I thought, like, but he'll never have a sense then of the classic narrative watching it in 20-minute parts. Like, it just, you know, the continuous feel of it. You know what I think? You made an interesting point about comedies. You know what I think is going to go away? Because I don't think movies in the theater are going to go away anytime real soon. But I think emotions in the movies will go away. I started to think about what movies are going to get made. Well, they're going to be the big blockbusters. It's going to be John Wick. It's going to be the Marvel movies. And I love those movies. And I'd rather see them on a big screen with a great sound system. So that's great. But I'm not. Then I started thinking about movies like Brooklyn and, you know, movies that you cry at. And I thought, well, who's going to pay $100 to go see a movie to cry at?
You're talking to one right now. But yeah. I'm probably in the minority.
They're going to stop making them as films. Like just the studios that back and finance these films, like they're not going to make movies that people cry at. They're not going to make movies that are built on slow, you know, moments that gestate over time. You know, it's going to just be bombardment, sensory bombardment. That's what we're going to get out of the movies exclusively. And one of the great things about being a movie lover back in the day was you could have so many different kinds of experiences depending on which film you went to see. I think that'll be true at home. I don't think that'll be true at the theater.
I hope you're wrong. I get what you're saying. Yeah, because it's all about making the tentpole movies. It's not about making the middle class movies. You know, it's going to be either about, you know, Captain Marvel, but it's not going to be about Lady Bird.
Well, that's exactly it. And, you know, I think about Brie Larson and how much I think she was a great Captain Marvel. And I thought she was great in Room. And she's going to have a chance to be Captain Marvel again. I don't know if they're making Room again.
Yeah.
Too bad, though. Good movie. Yeah. Basketball, baseball, hockey. Where do you want to go, Maddie?
Okay. And I got people texting me about this, saying it's private. He doesn't need to reveal it. And okay. I guess that's true. This is a blind spot for me. I didn't understand when they asked LeBron James, you know, are you going to get vaccinated? And instead of just going, yeah, why not? He's like, well, you know, and he kind of guffawed. It's something to talk about with my family. I'm going to keep it private. And I'm like, but all the science is out there. And I think this is a blind spot for me. And the thing is, I've never got a flu vaccination, but I'll get the COVID vaccination. And, you know, if people say you need to get the flu one, I'll change my mind. But I didn't understand why something like that was so private. And for LeBron, he's got to realize, and you know, he's the most scrutinized athlete we've ever been around. It's going to be talked about. And I have a 3-point contest thought about basketball, but the LeBron one I found fascinating.
I can't really give you a good answer because the answer should be clearly and easily. Sure.
Yeah.
But even if it's clearly and easily no for you, because it's the kind of thing you don't believe in, if you don't, at this point, it's hard to be unsure, I guess. Maybe that's not true. I don't know. Maybe there's lots of people who are unsure. And when it comes to kids, that's even more complicated because apparently the testing on kids isn't quite as thorough as it's been on adults. And, you know, there's a lot of information floating out there. And I guess what I'm trying to say in all of this is maybe it's okay not to be sure. But if he's saying it's private, it's because the answer is no.
Yeah, that was kind of my thought. I'm like, LeBron, you're going to get the super extra good vaccine, you know, like, and you're LeBron James. Like, I don't know. That one sort of jarred me a little bit. I don't understand it. But if you want to actually just go basketball, I had one takeaway from the All-Star weekend.
Okay, go for it.
I miss Klay Thompson. Because seeing Steph Curry at the peak of his powers, you realize that when Klay went down, it also meant that Draymond Green wasn't going to give a shit on every night because, you know, when he sees things aren't going well, he doesn't always try his best. And it just, the domino effect, I'm like, seeing Steph at his best, I'm like, I wish Klay was there because then Draymond would be at his best. And you would have a team that would legitimately be in the conversation for best team in the NBA. And it got taken away from us because of one injury.
It's a great point about the status of the team, too, because the West, like everything this year, is so much more wide open. Usually you and I are like, there's two, maybe three teams we actually believe in. And now I feel like there's probably eight or nine teams that could win.
I'm not that high.
You don't think so?
No.
I can make a pretty good case for a lot of teams, I think. But regardless, it's, you got to admit this.
It's
not a usual year in basketball where it's one or two teams per conference and everybody else. It's not quite that cut and dry.
Okay. On March 9th, we can say that. But if when Kevin Durant comes back and Anthony Davis comes back, I could see in a month from now, we're like, it's going to be LeBron versus Kyrie and everyone else is going to be to the wayside.
Quick sidebar. Is it LeBron versus Kyrie or LeBron versus Durant?
It's LeBron versus Durant. It is LeBron versus Durant. Kyrie's the appetizer.
It is a spicy meatball, though, isn't it? That potential matchup.
Oh, it absolutely is, because everyone's going to be rooting against the Brooklyn Nets, like everyone, rightfully so. But like right now, yeah, you can make claims for a bunch of teams, but Bob, I'm looking ahead. And when Durant comes back, it's going to be like, oh yeah, Durant. Joel Embiid, you're great. It's not happening. And Giannis, another year. It's not happening. Like that's my concern.
To go back to Klay, Klay got, in legal terms, they call it double jeopardy when you're tried twice for the same crime.
Yeah.
He came back from a brutal injury only to get re-injured just as he was wrapping up his rehab with another brutal injury.
Yep.
And I think just our inherent sense of fair play says, if you can get all the way back from something that hard, the universe should cut you enough slack that you at least get a half a season in.
Yes.
It's just fundamentally unfair. You would have to be a very cold-hearted person to look at Klay Thompson and not feel for that guy. I didn't know this about him, but I've been reading more and more about him after he got hurt because people were talking about him, and I didn't realize he was so crazy competitive. Did you know he was like on the all-NBA competitive team kind of guy?
I didn't. I just knew that everyone loved him.
They love him, but like, because he's kind of got a chill look to him. But apparently he's just like absolutely driven to win and play at, you know. And that makes me even sadder, is if he's that focused, this must be so hard. The poor guy.
Yeah. No. Yeah. So that was it is really bad. By the way, good analogy. That was a good analogy, but double jeopardy. And yeah, I feel bad for him. And it robbed the NBA of a compelling team.
And, you know, there's something about it. It's amazing how Steph Curry is an international superstar. My little nephew lives in Germany. My sister's, you know, she married a German guy and they've been there. And like, so he's a German kid. And who's his favorite player? Steph Curry. And I bet you that story is told all over the world. Kids love Steph Curry. And it's good business for the NBA if Steph's doing well.
Yeah, because he looks like a human. Like Giannis, Embiid, LeBron, Kawhi in those hands. Like these are, you know, these are these giant, perfectly sculpted, you know, human beings that you can't relate to. You can relate to Steph Curry.
Well, and his skill is something that people can do.
Yeah.
Shoot.
You can shoot. You can't actually, but physically you feel like you can. You know, here's the difference. You know you can't dunk. You think you could shoot.
Right. That's exactly it. Like the kid who tried to kiss the rim during the dunk contest. I'm not going to do that, Matt. I feel really confident that I could try my hardest and I'm not going to do that. But I can make three pointers, not as frequently as Steph, and generally on target. You know what I realized watching the three-point contest and just there's two things actually. The dunk contest can't be good unless there's famous players in it. You know,
yes.
Gone are the days when it used to be Dominique versus Michael. And they were star players. Or Sean
or Kemp. Or even Blake Griffin. Or even Dwight Howard. We don't have those days anymore.
Like you can't just like get some, you know, get the 11th man off each bench and have them have a dunk contest. Like it's like the NIT tournament. It just, I can't get excited about it. The other thing is, don't you feel like when Steph pulls up from half court and hits it, that's more of a wow factor in today's NBA than a big dunk? We're more amazed by the 4-point shot.
Unless it's a, you know, you posterize a really good defender. That's the equivalent. But if it's, even if it's just a good dunk, yeah, the reason why we like the long three is there's an extra beat or two of anticipation, you know, as the ball is sailing in the air, you know, so you get sort of more of a buildup aesthetically than you do a dunk.
It's an outstanding point, actually. It's very cinematic, the long three.
Yeah.
We have a second to sort of ride with it. And as it's coming down, ooh, where's it going to land? And then that, like maybe one of the greatest sounds in all of sports, the swish of a basket. Yeah. Like the snap of the twine after a clean shot. Oh my God. That's like the ping of the post in hockey or the crack of the bat.
If you want to go cinematic, a dunk is a rat-a-tat-tat, nothing gun scene, but a long three-pointer, that's a Morgan Freeman voiceover. You know, that's a, and then Steph let the ball out of his hands. It traveled majestically through the air. Everyone knew it was going to go, you know, and then like it's got more of that cinematic feel to it.
Oh my God, that's a great analogy. I was going to go a Steadicam tracking shot, but then you started doing the Morgan Freeman. I'm like, no, yeah. No, he's right. He's right. That's the prestige move right there. Hey, I got a question for you since we're talking a bit about the Nets and Durant. I started wondering this in my mind, especially with Blake Griffin now going over to the Nets. When their careers are done, who will we look back at more fondly, Kyrie Irving or James Harden?
Oh, God, that's a real Sophie's choice, Bob.
I've been listening to a lot of talk about how Harden can't be the MVP no matter how good he is in the second half because people just hate him too much.
Yep.
But he might be the best player in the league. And
he already destroyed one team. If he played hard, Houston's a playoff team.
I know. No, I know. Like, but then I thought about Kyrie Irving. I mean, he left the Cavs with LeBron, and then he really tanked it with the Celtics. And, you know, even with the Nets, he seems like you're just waiting for him to go off in some weird way. So I started thinking, okay, when this is all done, who will we look back at more fondly? Kyrie Irving, James Harden.
By process of elimination, I have to go with Kyrie because as egregious as he's been, and remember the big issues with Kyrie, people have said, well, he was away because of, you know, of mental issues or because of social and all this. I'm like, that's fine. But it still doesn't change the fact he was seen at a party, an indoor party without a mask on, or he didn't even send a quick text to his coach, you know. But if I'm going to go between the two, I'm going to go Kyrie. He didn't like Harden hit a new heinous level of just petulant behavior.
I agree with you completely. And I'll go one step further with Kyrie. I think I might actually like him.
Yeah, I can't. He seems like the too cool for school. Like he seems like the grade 7 kid who read 2 lines of poetry and that now believes he's smarter than everyone else when he's actually misquoting it. And the poetry was from a Happy Meal. So, yeah, I still can't deal with Kyrie.
Maybe that's why I like him. I relate to him. Hey, okay, so I want to talk to you about the Lowry potential trade. First of all, I'm going to give myself the Johnny Canine pat on my own back. I see that the Miami stuff with Duncan Robinson and either Olynyk or Leonard as a mid-exception cuttable contract is starting to get a little traction. Mm-hmm. I also heard Denver is looking to shop Gary Harris. Maybe. I mean, Gary Harris has been up and down, injuries and stuff. But here's the question I really want to get to, Matt. I started to think, I could live with the Miami deal. I could live with a Denver deal. But what if the Clippers deal to send Kyle there, what if that wound up being the best deal? Does Masai have a moral obligation to the fan base to not do it, even if it is the best deal?
No, he has no moral obligation. He traded away the only NBA All-Star. Well, I guess Lowry now as well.
Not to Kyle Lowry, to the fans. Does he have a moral obligation to the fans to not send Lowry to the Clippers? Because they could win the title. And do you want to watch Lowry win a title with LA?
I love Lowry. If he won one there, and listen, Kawhi got us a title. I it's funny, Bob. I don't have the same level of hate. Like, I for Kawhi, just wanted to go back with family, and he never once complained when he was here. So put it this way, Bob. I agree with you. It's not ideal. I'd rather it wasn't. I'd rather go to Denver and help Jamal Murray. That to me is the perfect scenario. But I if you can get the most, go to the Clippers.
No, never. And here's why. Okay. Steve Ballmer, Lawrence Frank, and all those tricks that they pulled, and the fact that the NBA didn't have the guts to pull the trigger on tampering charges when it was so obvious that even you and I knew about it. Like, Lawrence Frank was practically like, they stretched the decency of not tampering with another man's situation to the point where I can't live with that, because that would really be the bad guys one. Because not only did they wind up getting Kawhi in that case, but then they get Kyle a year and a bit later. No, yeah. No,
I get it.
No way, man. And you know what? You can even hear it in my voice. I don't get passionate about a lot, but Masai owes it to us. I don't care if they're offering Paul George for Utah.
I love it. I love it.
Oh, just no, I'm getting into the cause sports hate thing.
Yeah. Can I? There's only one thing that would be positive. There would be 1,000 embarrassing memes of sweaty, red faced Steve Ballmer falling out of his chair on that playoff run.
I just want to see him do a perp walk. I want to see Steve Ballmer do an NBA perp walk where he's let out of his own arena with Adam Silver behind him, reading him his rights for tampering. That's what I want.
That would be pretty sweet.
Oh, man, that would feel good. Hey, quick question for you. Can we do some Leafs?
Yeah, we can in one moment. If this does happen to Steve Ballmer, I would never tell him to get a lawyer, but if he needed a lawyer to deal with all the tampering, there's only one lawyer you should go after, and that is our lawyer, Jeff Pollock. If you need legal advice or help or stuff with your wills or litigation, states, or trusts, Jeff Pollock is our lawyer, our sponsor, jeffpollock.com. That's Jeff with a G, jeffpollock.com. The phone number is 416-777-0088, 416-777-0088, a fantastic small little family law firm. Where do you want to start in the Maple Leafs, Bob?
Well, they've got the set against Winnipeg coming up. So it feels like after they kicked Edmonton's ass, maybe people aren't as hype about this one. But maybe this one has even more to tell us, because it feels like, and maybe this is just where the story is at right now, but if there was any team in the North that was going to compete with the Leafs, it feels like it would be the Jets. They're awfully good in that top six. But what I'm really interested in more than that is the resting Matthews question. He's got the sore wrist. He's clearly not 100%. The Leafs are going to make the playoffs. Do we want to see them maybe take a Kawhi-esque approach with him?
Yes. 100% yes. Once he started missing some games, and then the idea of him getting 50 goals in 56 games, once that went away, then 100%, because the regular season doesn't mean a thing for this team. And, we'll see what he looks like tonight. But, and by the way, like he's generated a lot. He's generated 15 shots in the three games since he's been back, and he's got the most ice time, you know, so I'm not overly worried. But as a philosophy, if he's saying, yeah, it still needs some more healing, then 100% give him time off.
The one thing is, it would be really nice to have a Leaf win the Hart. Now, obviously, you wouldn't want to sacrifice his health in the playoffs for that pursuit. But just as somebody who's never really been able to celebrate a Leaf as, like, in my whole lifetime, as the best player in the league, man, it would mean a lot to our market to be able to say we have the best player in the league. And Matthews could win the Hart, in theory. Yep. Like he's on the short list of names that are genuinely in the running. I don't know. At what point do you start to... I think personal accolades matter up to a point, but then there's that gray area where you go, are we going to be overly cautious? Or are we going to let him try to win this thing? I don't know. You say rest him. I'm not so sure.
I'm saying you have to be a little bit more. I err on the side of caution. But here's the thing. There is no one right answer. Remember those couple of years when the Indianapolis Colts would have, they'd be 14-0 and then it's like, oh, well, should we go for it or they rest? And whatever move they made, it always ended up failing because Ty Law would intercept Peyton Manning in the playoffs. But there is no right answer. I guess in the end, if Matthews is comfortable, then 100% play him, because you know he's not going to shirk his responsibilities. We've seen how better he's been defensively. We've seen how more physical he's been. He wants to go out there and win. I think he was embarrassed by, you know, what's happened last year and all of last season. So if he says, guys, I need a game off, I trust him more than, say, I would if James Harden says, guys, I need a night off. It's a 2-for-1 night at Scores.
Okay, so I'm going to flip over to baseball, and here's how I'm going to make the transition.
Do it.
You're saying that about Matthews because Matthews has clearly identified himself with killer creative instinct, right? And competitive instinct.
Yep.
Like he's on the cutting edge of that. And the number one candidate for MVP in basketball right now is Joel Embiid. And one thing that those guys both have in common is this is the year where all those things we wanted them to do, they started doing. And now they're as dominant as everyone always thought they could be, right?
Yes.
I'm landing on the steps of Vladdy Guerrero here.
Mm.
At what point do we look at a Matthews, do we look at an Embiid and see how, okay, those guys did what they were supposed to do, now they're succeeding? Is this the year where Vladdy has to do that, or we start going, maybe he's not that guy? I realize this might be a hot take kind of thing, but
I don't think it's that hot take.
Okay, go for it.
I don't think it's that hot take. There, you know, this was a guy who came in with, you know, who just destroyed at every level before the majors. The high expectations on him wasn't just done by the hot take people. It was done by the analytics people. It was done by the baseball insiders. It was everyone. And, you know, he had a nice first year. But then last year, I'm sorry, it is a disappointment. And we get nervous talking about it because no one wants to body shame or anything like that. But in athletics, you get paid a lot of money. And part of your job beyond hitting a ball is being in shape. And he wasn't in shape. And, you know, we didn't 100% kill him because he's a super young guy and adjusting to a new lifestyle. But there's also, hey, be a professional. There's lots of other young guys that didn't fall into that trap. And then when you throw in on top of that, just what a mess the pitching is going to be. Yes, this is the year, Vlad, where we can't have Bo Bichette's much better than you. Bo Bichette can be better than you, but there better not be a large gap between Bichette and you.
If he's not the Hall of Famer that everyone projected, that's okay. Because you think about, like, baseball's so filled with prospects that when it's time to make the jump, for one reason or another, they don't. Remember back in the day reading how Todd Van Poppel was going to be the next great pitcher, and then you go, you know, or Phil Hughes was going to be the next great pitcher, and you go, who? So if he's not that guy, that's fine, but you don't want to feel it's because there's anything less than 100% effort in trying to get there. And I don't think it's a body-shaming thing, because when Prince Fielder was one of the best hitters in baseball, or when Albert Pujols was the best hitter in baseball, one of the best hitters ever, Tony Gwynn, like, these guys didn't have traditional athlete physiques, but nobody questioned, you know, their commitment. One, because the results were there. And two, baseball's maybe not the kind of sport where you have to, you know, let's just say there's a lot more forgiveness for different body types in baseball than maybe other sports.
Yeah. But when, space. But, yeah.
But when the results aren't there, when the results aren't there, it's impossible not to question it. How could you not? Like, you're just, you know, no one says you have to come in like, you know, looking like Zeus, but you can't hit 200 and look like you're out of shape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. There's going to be a lot of eyes on him.
I just thought about this because the thing that I find, and I've mentioned this on the pod before, that I love so much about Austin Matthews here, it's not just that he's scoring because he's always scored. It's the fact that we're having meaningful conversations about him as a dominant two-way player. And that's thrilling because he's found a way to take all that talent and translate to a complete game. And Joel Embiid, for years, it was like, oh my God, you're massive. You're 7'3". You're gargantuan. Go dominate the paint. And, you know, he could still step out and hit from three, but he gets to the free throw line a lot, like 10 times a game kind of thing. You know, he's using that size and he's the best player in the game right now. So I take this to, I'm getting greedy because of all the success Toronto Sports has had recently. And I want to see Vladdy be that guy. I think I'll be disappointed in this year if he's not.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a reason why everyone raved about him. And now we want to see it. And by the way, if it flames out, then it's partial on him, and maybe it's partially in all on the baseball world for getting it wrong. It's just that everyone at every level and every mindset pointed to him as being a star. So there's a reason why we went in with high expectations, and there's a reason why we've been a little bit disappointed. And I bet Vlad would be disappointed in himself as well.
There's a kind of you've mentioned this lots on Twitter. There's a tendency to overprotect players,
yep,
and overhate team and management.
Mm-hmm.
And so you almost reflexively go, oh, am I being too hard on this player? And I don't think so. You know, I don't think so. And I don't think, like, there's a lot of stuff to be excited about with the Jays year coming up. There's a lot of question marks to be had, but I feel like the team and the fan base has been patient with this group long enough that if they don't translate this into success this year, I think it's perfectly reasonable to turn this into what the f-, you know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, God, it's such a cliche. In the end, everything will probably just come down to pitching. You know, I mean, you bring in Springer, and this team should mash. This team should 100% mash this year.
Yeah, the pitching is a bit suspect, though. Anything else you want to cover? We're up around 50 minutes. You know, we could knock off early and call it a weekend.
Well, by the way, before we do, where you're heading back up north?
Yeah, I'm going to head back up north. We're going to go for a few days. Well, when they pushed back spring break to April, we still had vacation days that had to be taken in March. Like, we meaning my family.
Yeah.
So we figured might as well do it now. School is just such a mess this year, Matt. It is such a mess. Like,
really? What's going on?
Oh, no, it's just...
I'm kidding. No, I'm being sarcastic.
That's funny. It's just I keep getting stories. Like, I'm starting to talk more and more to other parents. This one parent got blocked by a teacher online. I thought that was pretty funny. I guess she was asking too many questions of the teacher, and the teacher found a way to block her.
Jeez. It's like they were getting into an argument about Nylander.
Yeah, that's really funny. You know, people are just getting testy all over the place. You know, and I'm sure this is sort of like case by case. I don't want to paint everybody with the same brush because that's ridiculous. I kind of feel like everybody now, this is just the general feeling I have, is let's just limp to the end of the year.
That's just got to be tough. This is so tough on the kids. But,
I ask them all the time, how are you guys doing? They say mostly bored. They get yelled at. They get yelled at a lot, you know, from what I
can tell. I'll tell your wife, Sandra, to be nicer on them.
Oh, yeah, because Sandra's the one doing the yelling. okay, let's see here. We're wrapping up. Any final thoughts on our drive to 200?
What's that?
Any final thoughts on our drive to 200?
No, not really. Just let's see. 200 by the 200th episode, the weather will be nicer. So that's good. We'll have more by our 200th episode. We'll know if Kyle Lowry is still here. There'll be a lot more clarity on episode 200. At the very least, I could say that.
Okay. Well, then we'll just phone it in till then.
Absolutely. Ha, Bob. All the best. Safe drive up. Enjoy the northern hinterland of Ontario. And we'll talk soon.
Catch you soon, buddy.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.